the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. And Vince, we start hour number two with a very special guest on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline.
That's right. It's attorney and sports legal analyst Dan Lust to talk about the potential legal ramifications of the Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph saga. Dan, Vince, and John here in Knoxville. Great to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys. We got a lot to unpack today.
Yeah, definitely. And we, you know, there's so much going on with litigation these days. A lot of people are talking about the whole Houston Astros scandal and everything going down there. But in looking in the NFL news that we had just a few days ago, Myles Garrett speaking out. Now his suspension was reinstated and his suspension shortened. It was supposed to carry over into this year. He obviously reiterated his allegations of what Mason Rudolph said to him at the time of that on-field incident. What could we see in terms of the legal process and what Garrett says versus what Mason Rudolph is saying and what the investigation found as well?
Yeah, a lot to unpack. So I guess the one thing that I think is important to note, right? Day one when this happens, we're talking back in November 14th. That's week 11. So it's Browns, Steelers, the game's in Cleveland. We're here talking about a potential defamation case, not necessarily because of what was said on the field, right? I guess in a sense we are, but it's that Myles Garrett has then repeated that after the fact. So we didn't hear a word of it, you know, the day after that. But 6 days after Myles Garrett apparently made this claim that Mason Rudolph made a racial slur is what motivated his Myles Garrett's actions. And he made that to the NFL at this hearing when they were trying to figure out his suspension. So as you mentioned, he was suspended indefinitely. And the reason why this is back in the story, back in the news this week, be it February, 4 months later, is because Myles Garrett's suspension was lifted. He's going to be eligible to play in the preseason, week one, all that fun stuff for the Browns. But what I want to really key on, I said it wasn't anything that Myles Garrett said on the field. Myles Garrett this past week won on ESPN with Mina Kimes. He sat down, wanted to kind of repair his image. But in so doing, he reiterated the same claim. He stood by it. And he said that Mason Rudolph called him a racial slur on the field. And what we've seen in the aftermath of that, just really in the past few days, it's really been a whole collective effort on Mason Rudolph's team's part. Mason Rudolph tweeted out. He never said that he stands by it. Mason Rudolph's agent tweeted out a statement in which he said that what Myles Garrett has done amounts to defamation, and he's, you know, they're readying and threatening to sue him in a court of law in California, and that's because of where Myles Garrett recently said these statements. This was this past week to Mina Kimes. And guys, the most interesting development maybe in all of this is Mike Tomlin not only issuing a statement, but 24 hours later going on First Take and doubling down on that. So it's really going to be interesting to see where, you know, the next shoe drops.
What about how difficult is it going to be for Mason Rudolph to defend himself against those allegations of Myles Garrett?
So, I mean, when at least at this point, right, how is Mason Rudolph defending himself? He's doing it in the court of public opinion, right? He's getting out there quick. His attorney's getting out there. His head coach is getting out there. So we have to kind of ask ourselves, right, the first question is, will Mason Rudolph follow through on his threat to sue? And the second leg of that is, can he win? So will he sue? I mean, guys, I'm not sure if you're following this. You know, I'm here in New York. Somebody, a fan, is suing Brett Gardner because of a fake relationship they're having online. I'm not sure if you guys have caught wind of this, but you can sue anyone for anything. It's a different question as to whether or not you can win. So basically, in defamation, it breaks down to three elements. It's you have to prove, if you're Mason Rudolph, that the statement that Myles Garrett said was false, and the statement saying that Mason Rudolph called him a racial slur. So you have to prove that was false. The second part, Mason Rudolph's got to show that there's some damage to his reputation, which, guys, I think is pretty obvious, right? If you're called a racist by someone, that's going to harm your reputation in some way, shape, or form. The third one, and this is really, again, going to will Mason Rudolph win on this defamation suit. The third one is something called actual malice. Mason Rudolph's going to have to show that Myles Garrett is making this statement knowing it to be false, that Myles Garrett essentially just created a story and is maintaining it just to harm Mason Rudolph's reputation. So that's really the hard part, guys, because at the end of the day, Mason Rudolph's going to have to get a judge or a jury inside of Myles Garrett's head and convince them that he's just completely fabricating this whole story, which is definitely an uphill battle.
It was something to see Mike Tomlin come out in such strong support. And as you mentioned, double down not long after his initial comments for Mason Rudolph. You kind of see something missing on the other side. There hasn't really been anybody that I've seen, Dan, that has corroborated Myles Garrett's claim. Hasn't been a teammate. There was some consideration in terms of all the Twitter timeline conversation that's gone on that perhaps he shared this with his then head coach, Freddie Kitchens. I haven't seen anything from Freddie Kitchens that says yes or no to that. Have you seen anybody that follows up that was actually on the field or a part of that game in support of Myles Garrett?
So quite the contrary, and we'll take that to the next level, right? You know, everyone in the news, we're talking about the Astros a lot. And in the MLB's investigation of the Astros, right, we're talking about Buzzergate. The MLB kind of said, we didn't find any evidence of there being a buzzer. It didn't come up in our investigation. Quite the contrary when it comes to the NFL. The NFL said, we spoke to the players that were on the field at that time. We checked all the hot mics. We spoke to the refs. We spoke to everyone in that vicinity. Mike Tomlin said separately, outside of what the NFL did, he spoke to his friends that were on the Cleveland Browns. No one is backing up the statement that that Mason Rudolph said that. So let's put ourselves in the head of Myles Garrett. He's standing by what he believes he heard. And guys, let's just use common sense, right? When we, as attorneys, when we go to trial, we speak to these jurors and we just say, use common sense at the end of the day. How could Myles Garrett really truthfully believe that he heard this from someone? I mean, we watched the clip 100 times. Mason Rudolph's head's getting thrown into the ground, right? Maybe he said something. Right. Maybe Myles Garrett heard it from the stands. Maybe he heard it from another player. Maybe he just completely misunderstood what someone else was saying. But that really speaks to this third legal obstacle I talked about, this actual malice. Mason Rudolph needs to prove, and it's with beyond a reasonable degree of certainty is the standard, that Myles Garrett is completely just lying and knowingly lying about the story, which I think is going to be really hard. So, you know, I don't know if we're going to hear anything else from Myles Garrett. I think he wants the story to die down, and I think maybe Mason Rudolph does as well. But what we saw, you know, as an attorney, as I was watching it, you know, retaining an attorney to put out a statement, having your head coach go out, you know, back-to-back days, they're sending a shot to Garrett. They're saying, if you don't cut it out, we'll test it in the court. We'll see what happens.
As far as just the NFL and its handling of Garrett in this situation, were you surprised at all that they went ahead as early into the offseason as they did say that you're clear, you're ready to go?
Personally, I was. So I had done some research in the history of the NFL. We had actually this past year the longest suspension for an on-field incident. That's Vontaze Burfict. He hit 12 games. So when in week 11 we hear that Myles Garrett's getting an indefinite suspension, that's very rare in football. We don't really hear in baseball too. We don't hear, we're going to suspend you indefinitely and we'll figure out when you're going to come back. It's kind of interesting, right? So they obviously wanted to get him off the field quick, but they weren't sure how long they were going to take it. So at the time the suspension was issued, I said, well, this is something we've never seen in sports before. I mean, we've seen someone like Vontaze Burfict with a series of dirty hits. He's a linebacker on the Raiders. But we've never seen someone get hit over the head with a helmet. And, you know, and I don't mean to make light of it, but getting hit over the head with your own helmet is not something that you subscribe to when you lace up the boots. So I thought that we might even see a longer suspension that came out of it. But I think really the NFL making a really clear statement, Myles, you know, we want you to focus on your offseason. We want you back for week one. I think that's sending a message that the NFL has, at least in some way, shape, or form, reconsidered its earlier position. And you know, who knows what's going on behind the scenes, but that's the message it sends, you know, outwardly.
Visiting with Dan Lust, sports legal analyst. You're talking about the Myles Garrett, Mason Rudolph situation and potential litigation with that. Now, Dan, is there any sort of precedent or even similar type of litigation that we've seen in sports that you could compare this situation to at all?
You know, the truth is this. I mean, and I should probably mention at the top, a lot of these incidents that happened on the field that he said, she said, maybe even something like this helmet strike. The NFL has this thing, you know, obviously you guys are familiar with it, the collective bargaining agreement, that sends these type of disputes, anything that's inextricably, you know, intertwined with something that happens on the field, and it makes arbitration your sole forum. So there's, you know, bound to be a number of these things that happen behind the scenes. They're not really litigated out in front of us because you know, just like we're talking about this today, you know, there being an allegation of a racial slur. That doesn't bode well for the NFL Shield, doesn't bode well for the Steelers, doesn't bode well for the Browns. So a lot of this stuff gets dealt with behind the scenes. The only thing I'll point out, guys, which I think is interesting, we haven't spoke about it yet. There is the potential, if a defamation suit is brought, if I'm saying if any suit is brought, there also could be the battery slash assault claim that's thrown into this, right? I kind of mentioned it. When you sign up to play football, maybe you kind of know that you could get a concussion. When you play baseball, you know you could get a baseball to the temple. But as a football player, we've never seen someone get hit over the head with their helmet, so you can't really sign up for that. So if we're kind of weighing where the strengths are in this case, I actually think that a potential battery assault case might even actually be stronger than the defamation case when it comes to Mason Rudolph.
Interesting. Well, you can follow Dan on Twitter. It's at DLust, ESQ. That's DLUSTESQ. A lot of comments.
Stands for Esquire.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously lots. You're being asked about the whole Astros scandal and all the potential litigation on that. Maybe we'll, when you can talk about it a little bit more and you have a little bit more time, we'll get you back on to discuss where that's going. I know that's growing daily, right?
It is. And just for your listeners that don't know, we had a fourth lawsuit filed against the Astros today. And I just posted about it on my Twitter feed. But the season ticket holder is now suing as a class action lawsuit against the Astros for, I guess, putting a deficient product on the field, and for now the forfeiture of draft picks caused by cheating. So literally by the minute, we're getting new lawsuits.
And I can't wait for the movie that comes out on the Brett Gardner future wife deal.
yes. That's terrifying. It's terrifying indeed.
Dan, thanks so much for your insights. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Happy to come on anytime.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, there's Dan Lust. Excellent insight on the legal ramifications that could come from those two cases.
Yeah, and it no doubt about it. It really comes down to it is so difficult to prove a negative.
Right.
But I also think that it's been very consistent and very loud from Mason Rudolph's side with each time that it's been brought up. And the first time it wasn't Myles Garrett. It was actually leaked from his meeting with the NFL that indeed this charge was made, but he immediately said, "That's not true." And then as Garrett said it again, as Dan was highlighting in kind of his exit interview after getting reinstated to the National Football League, that's when he went at it again and immediately, once more, it's been didn't say it, wouldn't say it, stop it. And so I just think that maybe this is exactly both sides saying, "I've got to prove this," and Rudolph, though, I think he has pushed back at every instance, which, and also the fact that there's not another member of the Browns that has said this indeed happened.
Right.
That's what, to me, is the biggest silence, because I don't see how he doesn't share it with a teammate, the guy that has the locker next to his. If indeed this happened, I just don't see how he doesn't share that with somebody who in turn would say, "Hey, Miles, talk to me about it after the game." That's not there.
You would think if it triggered him in that way, completely out of character, you would think he would have explained that part of it rather than it not getting out for days publicly after that.
Exactly.
And I think a great point in what he reiterated, that third portion of a defamation lawsuit, actual malice, knowing it to be true. And that's where it comes to what you're talking about, John, that no one else is sort of adding on to it and saying that Myles Garrett told him this. So he's going to have, I think that's the part for Mason Rudolph that's going to be difficult, is that, you know, how do we know that it wasn't just a misunderstanding, that he's just doing this in order to ruin his reputation and he has that actual malice. That's where it sort of grazed the area and will be difficult, but you know, so far both sides are digging in and holding firm in their stance.
And Tennessee now has two players that have two home runs on the season. Austin Knight was the first to that mark as he hit home runs Saturday and Sunday for the Volunteers. Today, Jake Rucker hits a two-run blast as he moved up in the lineup for Tennessee, and it's Tennessee in the bottom of the first leading Charlotte 2-0 as they play at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. We'll get a break and be back with more. That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. This is Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
99.1 The Sports Animal. Just because your workday is boring doesn't mean your radio station has to be.
Sports Talk continues. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Tennessee baseball leads 2-0 against UNC Charlotte. Top of the second. The Miners have a runner at second with one out. But in the first inning, lead man was retired. Second man singled to right. Right fielder threw behind the runner out at first. So nice job by Evan Russell. And so it was a shutout inning for Elijah Pleasants. And Tennessee gets two runs. Leadoff double by Max Ferguson, followed by the two-run home run with one out from Jake Rucker. Tennessee 2, Charlotte nothing as they play in the top of the second. And, Vince, you have another opportunity for a remarkable award for a remarkable young man, as tonight Trey Smith could come away. He's one of three finalists for the Jason Witten Award.
Yeah, well-deserved, and obviously does so much in the community, and Jason Witten is as good as it gets from that standpoint. So yeah, Tennessee football put out his travel out there to for that award announcement. So we'll see how it goes. Best of luck to Trey. Certainly a great kid.
Yeah, he's already won one award for all that he's done on the field and off the field. The courage that he has shown in battling past his health situation. And so tonight wouldn't be a big surprise, but he is one of three finalists for the Witten Award. And we'll see if indeed he comes away with another significant honor. And Drew Brees is going to be back. He said he's ready for one more ride with the Saints. What do you think he means to New Orleans?
Well, a massive amount. It completely changes your confidence level with him. You feel like the New Orleans Saints just have to make a couple of additions and tweaks and improvements to the roster, but it's within range that you can get there and be right back in the conversation to get back to the Super Bowl with that level of quarterback. I don't think his play has diminished any. It's completely different than a Phillip Rivers, who I thought hit the age wall last year. That is not the case with Drew Brees. I mean, he's one of the best quarterbacks ever, and he's first all time in the NFL in completions and passing yards, passing touchdowns, and there's many others that he's up there either at the top or near the top with his longevity. So I guess this will be season 20 for Drew Brees. And, now the question is that what happens to the quarterbacks behind him? Does that mean that Teddy Bridgewater now is going to find a new home? I think he was smartly waiting on what Drew Brees would decide, because if I'm Teddy Bridgewater, I'd much rather take over that team and not have to change anything and know that my head coach really loves me, and then I don't have to learn a new system, mm-hmm. and new teammates and all that. And that was a perfect winning situation for Teddy Bridgewater if Drew Brees would have left. Now it depends on how badly he wants to play. I think he's shown that he is starter worthy, took advantage of his opportunity this past year when they didn't have Drew Brees. And so, yeah, I think he'll be one of the most sought after quarterbacks on the market, which could very well have a big pool of elite quarterbacks that's out there. So I think there'll be a plenty good market for Bridgewater.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. And then as we were doing the show yesterday, they were running the Daytona 500. You had the big crash, which wiped out a significant portion of the field that was caused by Joey Logano right near the end of our program. Vince, we had no idea what the story would become after the race finished following the end of Sports Talk. And that was just an incredible crash that featured Ryan Newman right at the start-finish line. Denny Hamlin became only two. He won his third Daytona 500. Only two drivers have won more than him, and that would be Cale Yarborough and Richard Petty. But no doubt about it, the celebration was subdued once they were made aware of what had gone on, and that was just the horrific crash where Newman gets airborne, lands on his top, catches on fire, gets hit by another car. I mean, there was just so many different things. And for quite some time after the race ended, it was not known what the situation was with Ryan Newman. thankfully, the word came out that he was indeed in serious condition at a local hospital, but the good news was that the injuries were not life-threatening. So, but my goodness, the footage from that wreck is remarkable. And when you look at the safety that's involved, and it is ironic that you have today being the anniversary day, unfortunately, of when Dale Earnhardt lost his life at Daytona, that you have such incredible safety that's in place, safety measures in place, not just the vehicle, but also what the driver is connected to as they run from one week to the next. So I just think that for him to survive as he did last night's incredible wreck is truly miraculous.
It was terrifying watching that. And you immediately thought that this is scary and his life is very much in the balance. I mean, from first, Ryan Blaney was trying to give him a push. Mm-hmm. And to try to get him to the lead spot. And we talked to Dr. Jerry Punch yesterday about the role of teammates and teamwork.
Yes.
And Ryan Blaney was trying to do everything he could. He just got underneath him and sent him into the wall and then got sideways. And then I think it was Corey LaJoie's car came and slammed him from the side. And that's what sent him airborne and was in the car trapped for an extended period of time. And then the flames and everything, it was, man, it's just absolutely terrifying. And the sports world was praying and thinking about Ryan Newman yesterday, and NASCAR releasing the statement yesterday that he was in serious condition, but his injuries were not life threatening. So I guess there's been an update since then.
That's right. Roush Fenway Racing has updated the situation, says Ryan Newman remains under the care of doctors at Halifax Medical Center in Daytona Beach, Florida. He is awake and speaking with family and doctors. Ryan and his family have expressed their appreciation for the concern and heartfelt messages from across the country. They're grateful for the unwavering support of the NASCAR community and beyond, and they say they'll continue to provide information as it becomes available. So the news a little bit better today, mm-hmm. that Ryan Newman is awake and speaking with family and doctors. No word on the degree of injury and what he has suffered in regards to injuries, but just thankful to see that footage and then know that while obviously serious, that it's non-life-threatening injuries that he is now trying to recover from.
Well, and good on NASCAR for really enhancing drastically the safety measures in those cars, because as Ryan McGee pointed out yesterday from ESPN, there has not been a death in NASCAR since Dale Earnhardt, and to have a crash like that, and we've seen others that have been pretty violent and vicious, to have drivers to keep drivers alive from those situations, just incredible. You never want to see anything like that. It's on another level, but good on NASCAR for the safety measures.
So big win for Denny Hamlin. Now he can celebrate with having seen that Ryan Newman looks to be okay. And Vince, we now will get a break. And when we return, somebody else celebrating a huge victory.
Yeah, Scott Hot Sauce Holtzman, lightweight in the UFC, picked up his biggest victory in his career on Saturday out in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. We'll talk to him about that and what's ahead in his future. He is a former Knoxville Ice Bear and multi-sport star based right here in Knoxville. Super guy Scott Hot Sauce Holtzman joins us next.
On 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Today.
Sports Talk rolls on. I'm John Wilkerson, Vince Ferrara sitting in for Jimmy Hyams, and once again we go to the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline to be joined by a very special guest.
That's right, UFC lightweight, Knoxville resident, and super guy, Scott Hot Sauce Holtzman. Scott, congrats on the win. Vince and John here in Knoxville, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you, and we had you on a couple weeks ago to preview your fight with Jim Miller, the biggest name opponent you have had in a fight in your MMA career. What went well for you in your unanimous decision win from your vantage point?
Well, I won. That was number one. What went well?
All right. Thanks, Scott. We'll see you. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. A win in the UFC is a big deal, no matter what, you know, shape or size. So, and then to beat a guy like Jim Miller, a future Hall of Famer, one of the most well-known sport, names in the sport is definitely a cherry on top and a big accomplishment for my career.
You know, it seemed like there was a little bit of a feeling out period early in the fight, and then things kind of picked up a little bit, I guess, late in the first round and into the second round. Regardless of whether you guys were in stand up in the middle of the cage or the clinch where you did a lot of work, seemed like you were comfortable and in control and confident throughout. Is that the way you felt?
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, there's a little bit of a filling out process. You know, he's really good everywhere, so you got to be real careful. And he came out and he didn't fight in the first part of the fight, or really into the fight like we thought he was going to, like he had in the previous four or five fights. So took a little bit to adjust, but that's kind of what's going on out there. It's like a giant chess match. You're kind of reading and processing and split second real time, and you got to make decisions and be able to make adjustments on the fly. So that's kind of what we had to do. Took about half the first round to settle in there and figure it out, but after that the fight was all me.
Well, Scott, one, it's great to talk to you, and congratulations on just such a victory. But what has it been like to, one, get these last couple of opportunities to climb the ladder and be able to cash in and make the absolute most of these chances from your perspective?
It's been a little surreal because, I don't know, those bonuses are always there, always on the table. I feel like I've deserved them in the past and haven't got them, so I'd almost lost hope on ever getting, you know, extra money and things like that. You know, I'm just on my fourth contract here. That was the first fight on it. So I really, really capitalized on a big opportunity on Saturday night. So I'm enjoying life right now, but you got to stay humble. Can't get too high, too low. I'll have to get back to work here soon and fight an even more badass guy soon.
Well, that's fantastic. And it was something to see that in just the moments and the days leading up to your fight, that there are a lot of folks that were kind of circling you as one to watch and people going with a pick, picking you to get the win. What, I don't know if you saw any of that on social media, but if you did, what was that like? And then also, what's it been like to just enjoy the reaction and see how many people have celebrated your win?
It's been amazing. You know, MMA fans are really fickle. So I've had a good amount of fights where people have hated them and publicly berated me and called me all sorts of names and this and that on social media. So I know the last probably three or four fights, everybody's been really complimentary. And, you know, I'm getting a lot of momentum in the UFC and starting to become more well-known. So it's definitely a blessing, man, because we work so hard behind the scenes and, you know, go through a lot of stuff on the way here. You know, I've been training for 10, 11 years. It's been a long road. So to finally kind of cash in and feel like I'm getting some of the respect and love that I've always worked for and, you know, everything that I feel like I deserve has been a nice feeling.
We're visiting with Knoxville Scott Hot Sauce Holtzman. Got a unanimous decision victory and fight of the night bonus. That's what he was referring to earlier in the UFC in their Rio Rancho card this past Saturday night. So, Scott, you mentioned fighting someone even more difficult. Do you know who your next opponent is yet, or do you just assume because of this win you're in a position to fight somebody probably ranked?
I don't know for sure. I know there's, you know, four or five guys around me. I'm not sure if they'll give me somebody ranked or not. I would hope so. But it's hard, you know, I'm in a delicate spot right here because none of the ranked guys want to really fight anybody that's out of the rankings. So It's going to be tough. It'll have to be timing, or it'll have to be a short notice opportunity, or or somebody just outside of the rankings. But I think I'm sitting around 19 right now, so that's a pretty good spot. So hopefully I can get a ranked opponent, but 19 ain't too bad.
Yeah, is that updated after this past weekend? Because UFC on their website, they have not updated it from last week where you weren't ranked. But I thought with a win, you'd have a shot to get ranked. Is that up to the minute, Dino?
I mean, the UFC only puts the top 15 on their website.
Right.
So the website that's most commonly used now is called Tapology. And they have me ranked at 19th, I believe. So Jim was 20th before the fight. So.
Now, you mentioned guys that are ranked don't want to fight someone that's not ranked, especially when they're not ranked and they're dangerous and athletic. Is that a factor as well?
Yeah, yeah. Why would you want to take a chance on getting beat by a guy who didn't have a number by his name when you have a number by your name? It doesn't. You know, if you're the number 10 guy, you want to fight somebody ahead of you. Or if you're 15, you want to fight somebody ahead of you. You don't want to fight somebody out of the rankings. You don't want to take a chance on losing that number next to your name. So nobody really wants to do it. It's kind of tough to claw your way in there, especially in the lightweight division, the toughest division in the whole world. You know, other divisions like some of the women's, some of the smaller guys, and like light heavyweight, you win two fights, you're ranked. But lightweight, you got to win a whole sack full of times before you can get into the ranking.
Scott, what is the recovery process like after a bout like that?
Just depends on how injured you are. if you're just bruised up, then you could be recovered in a week or so. If you've got broken bones, then obviously those take a little longer. And if you've got torn ligaments, those take a little longer than that. So just depends. I don't have any serious injuries. I just have some bumps and bruises. So should be good to go here soon.
What was it like to celebrate the win with friends and family afterward?
It was fun. You know, I was telling them it probably would take a little bit to sink in kind of what I've done. I just feel like, for a kid from Knoxville, Tennessee, that's not a bad accomplishment. So all the pressure leading up to it and, you know, fighting a guy like that where I didn't know, you know, he's pretty much fought all the best of the best ever, and had one of the longest winning streaks of all time. And, of course, most fights of all time, and was going to tie the record Cowboy Cerrone for most wins of all time. So, obviously, that's a tall order. So there was a lot of pressure leading up to it. And for me to come through it and get the win was special. So I'm still trying to process it.
What did Jim Miller say to you after the fight?
He wasn't overly talkative. He, he was respectful, and I just thanked him for the opportunity. He didn't have to fight me. He could probably fight anybody he wanted to, but he did take the fight. He took a risk, obviously fighting a guy ranked lower than him. But that's part of the reason why he's so famous and well known, and because he's always been willing to fight anybody at the drop of a hat. So he was in a lot of pain afterwards. He had a couple injuries and, of course, some cuts and things like that. So we had some small talk, but we didn't have any extended conversation. But he was respectful.
What's your, through the years and even recently, if at all, what's been your communication with Dana White through the years?
Just limited. We're not friends or anything. It's kind of like a boss business relationship. We've chatted on the phone a couple times, and of course in person a handful of times. He's always told me he kind of likes my style. Of course, he likes anybody who's willing to just, throw punches and keep it exciting. So, just a business type relationship. You don't really see him a ton as a fighter. He kind of zooms in and out of the arena at the last minute, and he doesn't mingle with the common folk too often.
Did you get the common folk? Tennessee tough common folk, though, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Now, we're visiting with Scott Hot Sauce Holzman, UFC lightweight and Knoxville zone. Did you see the John Jones Reyes fight?
I did not watch that one, no.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm weird about watching the fights right before I'm fighting. I don't always like to see them, so I didn't tune in for that one. Well, I've heard a lot of people say that Reyes maybe won. I've heard it kind of go both ways, so.
Yeah, and a lot of the discussion since then has been with the scoring and the judging and how that can get better in the UFC and in mixed martial arts throughout. One of the things they've talked about is, hey, let's make this open scoring. Why is it that MMA is only the only sport where nobody knows the score until it's done? The athletes, the fans, everybody. Is that something you'd like to see, is open scoring in MMA?
Well, I think it can kind of go both ways. I think if it's open scoring and you know you're up two rounds, then maybe it makes the fight a little boring. So I could see how the promoters might not want that, because they always want excitement, right? But, I think also if the judges, put out their scores for the first round and everybody boos, then does that sway the judge and change their mind in real time? And then you start getting crowd. I always think that the crowd can sway the judges anyway. So if you get people starting to boo the judges in real time, then, that could present some problems too. So I don't really know the answer to that. All I know is it's such a new sport, and not many people are knowledgeable in all aspects. You got a lot of judges that come over from boxing, so they prefer certain things, or you get some wrestling judges, so on and so forth. So I don't really know the answer. I just think everybody should, if you're going to judge, you should have to train and be knowledgeable of positions and maybe even have fought before. So
do want to shift gears just a bit. You, of course, add to the fun for those folks, those fine folks in Fountain City. You've got your big victory, and I got to get your thoughts on Central winning back-to-back state football championships.
Oh, man, that was incredible. Of course, congrats to them. I was happy. I was at two or three of the playoff games. I love seeing them be successful. Coach Rosser, has been incredible for the program. I know he's moving on now to a new chapter in life, but, I was excited to see that. And, of course, I support him and am happy. I'm an ex-football player also.
Scott, we're happy that you joined us. Happy for your victory against Jim Miller. Hopefully they'll get things right with those rankings, and you'll be able to get some of those big fights you deserve. Congrats on the win. Thanks for the time. Great to talk to you as always.
Hey, thank you guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Right. Scott, we sure do appreciate it.
It's the man.
All right, take care.
It's the man right there. Super guy, but man, he is a beast in that UFC octagon.
And look at him go.
Yep.
That is Scott Holtzman joining us on the Stanley Fetzen Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Here at The Sports Animal, we never really grew up. We just learn how to act in public most of the time.
We come back to say so long for hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson, Vince Ferrara sitting in for Jimmy Hyams, and we can update what's going on at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. They play in the bottom of the third. It's Tennessee 4, UNC Charlotte 2. Tennessee with a two-run home run in the first from Jake Rucker. Also get a two-run double from Zach Daniels in the bottom of the second. Max Ferguson scoring on both big hits. Also Liam Pence scored in that second two-run number for Tennessee, and then you have the Miners getting on the board in the top of the third, taking advantage of a single to center that there was an error involved, so that allowed one run to score, and then the second run for the visitors came home on a sacrifice fly. So bottom of the third, Tennessee 4, UNC Charlotte 2. We'll get a break. Up next, hour number three of Sports Talk, and it starts with our friend Mark Pankratz as we talk Tennessee, SEC, and college hoops on 99.1 The Sports Animal.